This is the Jabberjaw Podcast Network.
For years, I was so fed up with shampoo, I just stopped washing my hair. I quit completely. I was so sick of poofy, frizzy, limp hair, distorting my natural oils. Until a few months ago, I found Modern Mammals, and it changed everything. And by the way, right now you can visit modernmammals.com and use code LSS for 10% off. So check that out. So look, I heard about this through the podcast, and before I agreed to advertise, they sent it to me and I was reluctant. But let me tell you, I should not have been. This stuff is absolutely magical. My hair felt better, smelled way better, and most importantly, looked better. And I know it will do the same for you as well. It doesn't have those hair-ruining chemicals like other products, and it doesn't leave any leftover residues. It works. Don't believe me? Go read their awesome reviews online as well. Go to modernmammals.com and use code LSS for 10% off. Again, that's modernmammals.com for 10% off with promo code LSS. Don't forget to use our promo code LSS so they know we sent you. Are you tired of getting slammed by hidden ticket fees? On SeatGeek, the price you see is the price you pay every time. No hidden fees, no surcharges at checkout, ever. Download the SeatGeek app today to start saving. SeatGeek is your ticket to amazing sports ticket deals. Hello and welcome to another episode of Lead Singer Syndrome. Great to have you with us as always. It's Monday, or whenever you listen to this. I'm feeling great. I hope you're having a great day as well. A great start to a brand new week. As always, I'm your host, Shane. Shane Told. I play in a band called Silverstein. I have a side project called River Oaks you should check out. And this podcast is all about me talking to other lead singers about what it's like to be the front man or front woman of a band. Now, today we have kind of a special and kind of a different episode. I sit down with not one, but two lead singers of the great band Dance Gavin Dance. Now, they have a singer, they have a lead singer and a lead screamer, which is a little bit different. Both of them are standalone. They don't play another instrument. So they really basically have the same job as each other, just one is more on the gritty side and one is more on the pretty side. Now, I have known Dance Gavin Dance for a very, very long time, back when Johnny Craig was their singer. Silverstein, we took them on one of their first ever, you know, real national tours. And I've kept in touch with those guys ever since. John Mess, who is their lead screamer and has come and gone in the band, actually. Me and him have been friends for a very long time, so it was great to have him on board, along with their newest singer, Tillian Pearson, who is an amazing singer with an amazing voice. And we really talk a lot about, you know, his role in the band now at this point, him being in the band now longer than any of the other lead singers. And it really is a very candid and a very honest talk that we have with these two guys. As always, I want you to get in touch. We have an email address. It's leadsingersyndrome@gmail.com. I read all the email. I try to get back to everybody. I'm not that great at email, I will admit. I'm pretty good on Twitter. It's at leadsingersyn, S-Y-N. I'm actually surprisingly good at Snapchat, which I just got recently. I don't have a lead singer syndrome one set up, but I have a personal one, which we actually talk about in the podcast. But it is Real Shane Told. Yes, kind of a douchey name, but hey, what are you going to do? Shane Told was taken. So check it out on Snapchat. We also have Instagram. We have Facebook. Look us up on there. And if you want to help out the show, the best way you can do that is if you buy anything online at all. If you use Amazon, just go to leadsingersyndrome.com/Amazon. That takes you right to the Amazon homepage. You log in as usual, and anything that you buy on Amazon, we get 4%. So that's really good. That adds up. So if you're buying any big purchases, even if you're just buying little things, I mean, they sell everything. So please, whatever you're going to buy, if you're going to buy it on Amazon, just use that affiliate link. It really helps out the show and it costs you absolutely nothing. Another way you can support the show is by writing a review on iTunes, preferably 5 stars. Go ahead, get on iTunes, please write a review. And hey, if you hate the show, if you think I suck, you can let me know. You can, in fact, give me a call on the telephone, leave me a message. The phone number is 657-666-HATE, H-A-T-E. That is 4283, if you don't know how a telephone works, which you probably don't, because if you're calling the hate line, you probably suck. So yeah, you suck. I told you you suck. Now it's time for you to tell me I suck. So call the hate line. We got it up and running, and we're going to roll out some hate line clips real soon. So if you want to get on there, give me a call, and you suck. All right, let's get to it. Here it is, episode 32 of Lead Singer Syndrome, and my conversation with John Mess and Tillian Pearson of Dance Gavin Dance. I never had a three-way. There we go. We'll start there. This is my first three-way, guys. So I'm so far, I'm really enjoying it.
Same.
By the way, your profile pictures are very sexy, especially utility. this is like glamour shots by Deb right there. That's beautiful.
Yeah, that was my my first single selfie that I ever took.
Beautiful.
I became single, and I'm like, I'm gonna take a selfie.
Oh, it's like single life, like you got dumped.
Yeah. Like my long-term girlfriend and I broke up, and I was like, all right, I'm going to take that. But it's actually from a while ago, that picture.
Oh, okay. So this isn't a recent breakup.
No, I've got a girlfriend again.
Oh, Craig. Yeah. I just went through a breakup of pretty long one, 4.5 years.
Oh, wow.
So yeah. So I've been dealing with that, and it's fun, you know? Hey, it's fun getting back on the horse at age 35, you know? Hey, it's awesome.
Yeah, it makes Snapchat more fun.
Dude, I no comment. No, I that's hilarious. I actually was single and then I got Snapchat, so I don't know Snapchat any other way, I guess I should say. Hey, so I'm here with John Mess and Tillian Pearson of Dance Gavin Dance. It's so good to have you guys. Thank you for taking time out of the studio day to sit with me. How's that going? You guys are recording right now, right?
Yeah, we're in the studio now. We're kind of less than halfway through vocals.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, we kind of just got here. Been here for like a week.
Damn, dude, you've only been there a week and you're already halfway through vocals?
Less than halfway.
That's insane. How did you record everything already? Drums, guitars, bass, everything?
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, John and I have just been here for a week.
Okay.
We've been in the studio. The band's been in the studio since April 11th. We got a long time.
Yeah, damn. No, I know you guys are, like, pretty... What's the word? I mean, like, you're a technical band. I'm sure you have to spend a lot of time getting things right, figuring stuff out, you know, making changes on the fly, all that stuff. Like, not an easy band to record, I imagine. So that must be challenging. So you guys just kind of let them handle the music and then you guys come in and do your thing?
Yeah, that's how it goes. I mean, this album, I think, particularly was a lot of Will writing and then getting with the rest of the band and kind of showing them the songs.
Right.
I think in the past it's been a little bit more collaborative. But yeah, it's still pretty much like everybody can have freedom and kind of do what they want.
That's cool. I mean, that's a really good way to do it. I mean, I got to ask you, like, I mean, this is kind of an obvious question, but I mean, you guys are a 2-singer band. You've always been a 2-singer band. How is that challenging? Like, I mean, especially with you, John, working with like so many different, you know, clean singers over the years, like how is the dynamic there, like figuring out, oh, who's going to do what part of the song? And is there ever like butting heads either with like you and the previous guys or like with you and Tillian now? How's that work out?
I think there's like usually a lot of parts where it's like, okay, this is definitely going to be a singing part and this part's probably going to be a screaming part. When there's that kind of gray area is usually when it gets a little more difficult. We always end up having some parts that are kind of just, here's the scream part, here's the singing part. And then we want to, you know, incorporate at least some sort of blend between the two, or some back and forth, or somehow working together. So that's often when it gets tricky. But recently with me and Tillian, we've been working together a lot smoother. So far we've had a cool variety of, you know, different styles of, or combinations of,
right,
putting the two dynamics together.
Yeah, but the thing is like, see, I've never really, I'm like such a, like a writer, like a lone wolf writer, you know, that
yeah.
You know, when I write like words and stuff, I don't even tell, like, the band doesn't know what they're about. The band doesn't know like my approach at all. You know, I just kind of show up and I have, like, most of the time they haven't even heard the words or the melodies even until like I'm actually recording them in some cases. So with you guys must have to work together on like something like lyrics, which that must be kind of strange. Like, you guys must talk about like what you're, you know, because you almost have to talk about like what you're writing about, and like you almost like kind of pour your heart out to the other person to make them understand if they're going to help writing. Or does it end up like one person kind of writes the bulk of one song that sort of they take the reins on, or do you guys kind of collaborate lyrically on everything?
I mean, I think there's always some ice to break at the beginning,
right?
Because we're doing a lot of writing here too. Like, we're like writing and tracking simultaneously. So I think once we get like the first couple songs out of the way, it becomes a lot easier. Like, you get that nervousness out, and then it's just like, yeah, then it just becomes like we're hanging out every day anyway.
Yeah, so. sure.
But yeah, at the beginning, it's always a little bit like, you know, I don't know if this is going to be awkward or whatever. But, and also we can, like, if somebody has lyrics for a song, we just kind of send it to each other. And then if with the other person reading it, we don't really have to talk about it as much because he's just reading it and then he gets the idea.
Right. Well, I'm sure that's cool too, because in some cases, like, I'm sure, you know, let's say Tillian comes up with an idea and sends it to you, John. Your interpretation of what he's saying could be completely different. And then when you start writing, and Tillian might read it and go, oh, I never like really thought about the song that way. So that must be a cool dynamic. Does that happen a lot?
That does happen. And someone can be, have an idea that's supposed to be sarcastic, and the other person kind of misinterprets it and thinks they're serious.
Right.
But that's fine.
Because
the listener is going to do that anyway.
Right, absolutely. That's exactly right. That's like sort of the beauty of music and kind of the whole point, you know, to be honest. But so you guys are in Portland. I'm going to make an assumption you're recording with Chris Crummett again.
Yes.
Nice. He's a good one, man. So do you guys have like a release date or a title or any information about the record?
We're flirting with two titles.
Okay.
And they're kind of based on, because a big part of the band, I think, is the album art.
Sure.
So they're kind of, the titles are kind of based on the album art. So however that's going to wind up working out, then we'll choose one of those two. What was your other question?
Oh, I was just wondering if you knew when it was going to come out.
Hopefully September, hopefully the end of September, because we have a tour planned around that.
Cool.
Yep.
Cool. That's very cool. Speaking of touring, you guys, how do I put this? Like, you guys have a strange way that you tour, like collaborating with old members all the time, like bringing Johnny back, Kurt back for this anniversary thing, which you're actually still doing, right? You're continue it in Europe.
For yeah.
Your tenure. Like, that to me, first of all, it's pretty cool. I mean, it's really, really cool for the fans that they get to see, you know, the original singers that are on the recordings. But for you guys to, first of all, coordinate that. Second of all, like, for you, Tillian, like, your ego of just like, well, I'm the fucking singer now. Like, how does that all work out, and how does that all play out?
It was easy on the last one because we weren't traveling together. Like, because they had their own bands.
Yeah.
And we didn't have to, I mean, not that I don't want to hang out with them, but all the time, you know what I mean?
Well, I mean, there's a reason that they're not in the fucking band anymore.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah, like, but, and it's not usually just musical differences. Like, usually when someone leaves a band, it's, I'd say like 95% of the time, it's a personal issue. So right. I totally get that.
Yeah. In Europe, it's going to be interesting because we're going to be traveling together. But I did just do the solo tour with Johnny and Kurt.
Yeah.
So that kind of warmed me up for what's going to happen in Europe.
How was that, man? Because I saw that and that must just be kind of weird.
Yeah, it was all opportunity. It's like, I don't think I would really have the opportunity to do a solo tour. And like, if I try to do it myself, maybe like, you know, lose money or it would be like a struggle. But it was kind of just, we kind of rode the wave of finishing the last 10-year tour in the States and try to keep it going so that we can all tour in between, you know, what our bands are doing. And it was really good though. It was a good thing to do for sure.
So when you guys were doing that, cause it was like, I didn't catch the tour and I didn't see any footage or video of it, but like, were you guys playing, each solo, like just you on stage, or were there other people playing? Like, obviously someone's playing with Johnny, I guess, but like, how did that work? And did you guys travel together? Did you guys have separate vehicles? How did it all work?
Yeah, we all had separate vehicles. Kurt had a pretty much a full band.
Oh yeah, okay.
I had Matt Mingus plus yep. backing tracks. Matt Mingus is the drummer for Dance Gamma Dance.
Oh, I'm well aware. I love him. He's my boy. Hey, there's something like, just a second, there's something kind of rattling around. I don't know if you hear that.
You know what? It could be my microphone, like, on my headphones, like, brushing up against my shirt. Is it gone?
I don't hear it now,
yeah.
Yeah, I'll just
watch
hold
for
it.
That. Yeah, it's a little
I'll
bit.
Just hold it from now on.
Yeah, I think the audio will be fine, like, if it's a little rattly, it's whatever. I could probably even noise gate that out or something, but whatever. It's cool, yeah. Sorry, so you were saying, yeah, Matt Mingus. I know Matt very well. I love Matt. So he was playing with you, okay, and you had backing tracks, and Johnny had, a full band too?
He had a bassist and drummer.
Okay,
but
yeah. Pardon my ignorance.
No, it's all good. I mean, I didn't know what the other bands were going to do either.
Oh, wow, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but we were all traveling separately, and we did a meet and greet together, and Johnny and I had tracked a song together before the tour to kind of promote it.
Okay.
And then we had Kurt play guitar and we performed it at the meet and greets.
So you and Johnny must be pretty tight.
I mean, yeah, we're fine. We tolerate each other.
Really? Okay. Yeah, it seems just cuz like I don't know. I see like you do, you know, you collaborated on like a Slaves track. You guys are doing stuff together, you're touring together, obviously this fall you're coming, and like I mean I obviously like Johnny Craig, I know Johnny very well as well. Everyone knows he's had his fair share of issues, and everyone knows, like, everyone that's been in a band with him will say, like, you know, he can be a real pain in the ass to be around at times. So saying you tolerate him is one thing, but, like, with you guys having, like, this is your third album now with Utillion, right, that you're recording mm-hmm. right now.
Yeah.
And after this 10-year stuff's done, like, is it just... Are you guys just putting on the blinders and saying, okay, we're moving forward with Dance Gavin Dance with this fucking lineup and that's it?
Yes.
And is that an important thing to you guys right now? And really, like, what is the motivation for you guys doing this stuff with the previous members? Like, what is it a money thing? Or is it?
I think partially it's for the fans, because we always get that kind of feedback, like they want to hear the old songs with the old singers. But I think it was just a one-time thing in the States, and it's going to be a one-time thing in Europe, and then it'll be done.
Right.
Yeah, and then the I guess earlier in the year we had done a headliner for Instant Gratification, and then we had some support slot options, but then we came up with the 10-year idea, and it just, we're just like, I guess we should, well, let's try this and see if it works. It wasn't as thought out, maybe, I guess, as it seemed.
It was
kind of just went with it.
Yeah, it was last minute. It was pretty last minute.
It was last minute, and you were able to put that all together and get everybody back. That's really crazy. That's surprising.
Yeah. I can't believe we actually completed it and didn't, nothing really went wrong.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's amazing, man. Like, yeah, I mean, it's like with you, John, like, like, I guess, you know, you were in the band, original member. You know, we met a very long time ago on like one of your, kind of one of your first, like, you know, I guess real tours, if I can say that. And then you left the band. You left the band for what, like a year and a half?
And I left the band the summer of 2008, and I came back the summer of 2010.
So it was 2 years.
Yeah, and it was about 2 years.
And okay, and like, so that's the thing, I guess, like, do you feel like because you went through that process, like you left the band and you came back, is that part of why you feel like it's okay that you can bring these other guys back and make it work? Because you went through that yourself? Do you think that that's a big part of it?
I think that helps, yeah. Also, I don't know, maybe we don't have, I don't know how to put it. Other bands might have, have disputes or have tension over small stuff. And always in DGD, we've been able to not really sweat the small stuff, but then have kind of big issues that have, affected the band over the years. And
right.
I guess it's sort of water under the bridge kind of thing at this point.
Right.
Yeah. I've noticed, like, I've been in a lot of different bands, whether for a long time or a short period of time, and this is the most laid-back vibe by far out of any band I've ever been in. Like, I don't know. I guess it's just not as serious. Like, people don't take the band. We take it seriously, but it's not like everything has to be done the exact perfect way, and there's no other way. It's kind of like we just kind of let it flow and let it happen. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. I know what you mean. And like Silverstein, we're the same way. Like, we're never like, there's bands, and I'm telling you, man, like, I think it's funny because professional bands, like we are professional bands, I think most of the ones that have been around for a long time, there's a certain looseness and there's a certain like almost sketchiness that almost has to be there in some ways. Because when bands are too organized or too serious, they don't last. It's a real thing, definitely. I think, man. And like,
definitely.
if you're the kind of band where you go
driving chaos,
right? I mean, there's that. And then also, if you're the kind of band that you're going to play on stage, you're going to play for an hour, and then someone fucks up a note, like a note that like nobody notices in the set, and then afterwards, you guys are like backstage, like blowing it up with each other, like, you know, getting in arguments and fights and stuff like that, like over whatever, like one note. You can't live like that as a band.
No.
You know, and I think that that's something that is a lot of amateur bands, I guess, or especially fans and stuff, like they don't really understand that there needs to be a certain looseness and almost lack of professionalism in some cases to be professional, which is interesting. But I mean, let's be honest, Dance Gavin Dance has been through some shit. You've been to hell and back. I mean, John, I mean, fuck, I remember back in the day, how many tours have we done together? I mean, I'm like two major ones, like in 07, which was the tour where Johnny, well, he quit or got kicked out or whatever it was for the first time. And then of course in 2010, on that summer tour. So I've seen you guys and like, I mean, I don't know if I'm putting this on blast, like people don't know, but you guys are like a party band. Like you guys get wild. This is true. And my question, I guess, is like back in 07, you know, you're young kids, you know, it's almost 10 years ago now. 2010, I think it was maybe even worse, to be honest with you. How is it now? Are you guys older, a little more mature, a little toned down? Or is it still like you never really know what could happen on any given night on tour with Dance Gavin Dance?
Yeah, it's toned down. It's not like the time Neil got really mad at me when I ripped off Weecar's mirror. But it's like
I don't remember that, but Neil got mad a lot, so I'm not surprised.
Yeah, that was good. And then what was I saying? Yeah, no, it's definitely dialed back. I mean, we went through a nice phase of insanity, but I think it hasn't really been like what it was in a number of years. But yeah, we still have fun. But.
Oh yeah, no, I mean, yeah, I mean, I remember like clearly one night, I want to say we were like in Seattle or something on that tour, and you guys were getting in your van. I mean, I shouldn't laugh because it's not funny, but literally no one was sober enough to drive the van. And we had like a drive. It was, I don't know where we were going. We were going like, it was insane, like Seattle to Boise or something, like really far. And literally nobody was sober enough. And I had to come up. I don't remember who was behind the wheel. And you guys didn't drive drunk. I don't want to put that like out, but it was like, how do you guys get to the point where you haven't even like talked about it? And one of your guys was like missing. And like, I was just like, I mean, I guess this makes sense why this band is in some ways dysfunctional, but at the same time, very functional in that you make great records and put on a great show every night. You know, it's crazy to me.
Yeah, it definitely helped cope with, I guess, some of the stuff going on with the early days of Johnny. And then it, I guess we got older and it became more real. And then you're not as young and you're not in a van and there's more, and you're headlining, and there's more money and more fans and more responsibility. So yeah, we've coped and gotten more mature as it's gone on.
Right. No.
I noticed the just the little tensions. It's when I call it like the beef jerky effect. Tim, the bassist, and I talk about it like at the beginning of the tour, and this is when I was first in the band and we were taking a van. There's always like that 1 week period at the beginning of tour where it's like, hey dude, do you want some beef jerky? Oh yeah, thanks man, sure. And then somewhere in the middle you hit the point where it's like if this guy offers me beef jerky, then I'm like I'm gonna fucking hit him or whatever.
Right.
It's like,
that's an interesting analogy.
But but I noticed like we've been taking a bandwagon recently, and that is a huge help to have privacy, and everybody kind of gets along pretty smoothly because of that, because everybody can retire to their own respective spaces.
You got bunks in a bandwagon, and a lot of people might not know what a bandwagon is. Basically, a bandwagon is kind of like a mini bus, but it's built on a truck chassis, and they're bumpy as hell.
It's a box truck with bunks. Yeah,
it's a box truck with bunks, essentially. Yep. And they are, if you've ever ridden in the back of a truck, that's pretty much what it's like, but you have to sleep through the night. How do you guys deal with that? Because like, we've done bandwagons tons of times, and I find that they are... they kind of suck. Like I have a lot of trouble sleeping. So how do you guys cope with that?
Yeah, well, dude, I do most of my sleeping like after the bandwagon's parked, I guess.
Oh yeah, yeah.
But I also am convinced, me and Tillian have had the middle bunks last time. I'm convinced the bottom and the top are just way significantly worse in terms of the ride. But yeah, it's definitely a lot of like sleep for an hour, wake up, try to go back to sleep.
Yeah. No, but it
just
feels...
the fact that you can get a full night's sleep is a big deal compared to the van and
right.
hotel.
Yeah. No, I mean, every time I'm in a bad way, it's like, I swear, like, it doesn't matter. You could be going like 15 miles per hour and it feels like you're going 85 down like a fucking hill, like, you know, down Mulholland Drive or something. Like it's wild, man. Those things are crazy.
I haven't really noticed too much. Cause for me, the only factors like that play into how well I'm going to sleep are darkness and sound. And I've got my Sleep Sounds app, and you can close the curtain and it gets completely dark. Like bumpiness doesn't bug me for some reason.
So you have what is this app?
It's called Sleep Machine.
Okay.
Like you just blend different like kind of static noises together. Like right now I have like a radiator mixed with some light rain mixed with a fish tank bubbling, and I just put it in my ears and then I just can't hear anything and I pass out.
Interesting. I have not heard of this. Yeah.
That's, Sleep Machine. It's worth it.
Do you do it? Do you do that like even when you're home too?
No.
It's a tour thing.
Yeah. At home, I just have a fan.
Okay.
But it does the same thing.
Yeah, I dated a girl once that had to turn the fan on, and to be honest, I hated it. It drives me crazy. Like, I don't know, man. Like, I know people like the white noise or whatever, but for some reason, when I fall asleep with the fan on and then I wake up with the fan on, I feel, like, stressed out about it. I don't know if that makes any sense, but I, yeah.
No,
I
don't like that too.
I don't like it. Yeah.
I don't know either.
Yeah. Whatever. Hey. Okay. Well, speaking of sleeping, I mean, you guys are both singers. You guys both probably need your sleep. What else do you guys do for like vocal, you know, remedies? Yeah. Vocal health, vocal remedies, all that shit that like, we pretty much talk about it every week on the show. I'm interested in it. I think the listeners are interested in it. If you're not interested in this, let me know. Maybe we'll start cutting this part out. I like it, so I'm always interested, especially with you guys being such different singers, like with what your jobs are.
I'm really
interested in that part of it.
So I've tried everything you could ever try. I'm pretty convinced that it goes in order. The number one most important thing is to get 8 hours of sleep.
Okay.
And then water. And then stress and anxiety, I think, are actually a big factor that people don't necessarily know.
Yeah,
be aware
that's a good
of.
Point. That's a good point, yeah.
Yeah, I think that can really affect you. Can make your acid reflux worse. I think eating, being aware of what you're eating, how large the meals are. And then if your voice is messed up, the thing with the throat coat tea, on the back of the box, it says drink 6 cups a day. And I've found over years of experience drinking this tea that if your voice is fucked, you need to actually just drink the tea over and over all day. And then the effects start to work. But
I didn't know that.
I don't know.
I've never done that. Maybe I should try that.
Maybe you should. Maybe. Yeah. Because I've done throat coat tea before and I've never found it really did anything.
Same.
And I guess I'm underdoing it.
Yeah, and then mix it with a bag of ginger tea. Settle your stomach. Another thing I do. Also, honey. If you're gonna use honey, it has to have an address on it, so you know that it's locally sourced from an actual bee farm. Because if you ingest honey that says like USDA organic, in order for that to get FDA certified, it doesn't actually have to contain honey. It just has to be certified as a legitimate product, so it doesn't necessarily mean anything.
Weird.
It's just pretty much corn syrup with sugar in it.
That's so weird.
Bad for you. So.
That I've never heard of that. Yeah. That like that. Yeah, that's so weird. I have to check that. I'm gonna go in my cupboard right now and see if I have addresses on my honey. That is whack.
Yeah, like if you're in a green room, and there's like one of those little bears with the honey in it, it's probably not even honey. It's probably just corn syrup with sugar.
That is so bizarre. Yeah,
that's
I can't. Yeah, that's
there's,
totally
there's a bunch of info on it. So yeah, check it out. And then there's the steam. There's the steam machine you can get from like Rite Aid, Walgreens,
with the weird
CVS.
Half glass face thing. You put your face one.
Yeah, you look like the guy from what the fuck is that?
What, Hannibal Lecter?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Silence of the Lambs. Yeah. That stuff works in a way. I don't know. I've found that if you like take a hot shower or like get a lot of steam in your throat or drink a hot tea or something before, like too soon before you play, maybe your like singing voice a little like clearer, but your screaming is like harder to get grit out of your voice. But,
interesting.
I don't know, that's just me.
I don't envy you guys at all.
You mean like screaming?
Having to scream like that. I could see like the upkeep of that being way worse.
Are you a screamer at all? Like, have you ever done it?
I mean, sometimes my voice will break up just because I'm pushing it hard or hard enough maybe. But, no, I don't really scream. It's, for me, it's basically stress is number one.
Yep.
If there's something going on in my life that's like stressing me out, I find my singing, it's harder to push it out. And I have I have this almost chronic like sinusitis where it's up in my head and ear area. So I started, John actually introduced me to Sudafed, which he doesn't take because it makes your voice too clean.
It drives me out too. Like it drives me out in not the right way. Like, do you know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah,
it constricts all of your nasal passages, so you're just not getting blood flow, so the inflammation is forced to just shrink everything up. So then you can drain all the shit that's built up, but if you have to perform, it can definitely screw you over.
Yeah.
Make you feel better.
For me, it's a savior, because my biggest problem that I run into is pushing off of notes. I get pain in my head.
Oh, wow.
Because I have this, like, sinus buildup, like, in my head and ears. It's like, it's not even in my nose. So when I take that, it pretty much makes it go away. And then obviously, like, getting a little loose, having a couple drinks helps big time. And warming up.
Environment's a big thing.
Like all the climate changes.
I'm good in Florida. I suck in Phoenix. I don't know why.
It's just because of the dryness, dude. It's just straight up the dryness. Like, I can't tell you how many times, like, wherever we were after Las Vegas, like, if we went to Phoenix or if we go to, like, California or wherever, like, whichever direction we're going, like, I'm a mess. Like, I'm okay in Las Vegas because I guess the dryness hasn't, like, caught up to me yet. But the day after, always rough, because I think I just don't drink enough water. Maybe it's, like, impossible to drink enough water. I don't know. But it's, it's bad. It's bad.
Well, I've read that the water you drink, like, today is what hydrates you tomorrow.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah, and I listened to, I don't remember which podcast it was, but I listened to one of your episodes, and you were talking about how the day before, like, something happened, like, somebody was in, like, a lot of dust the day before.
Oh, okay,
And then the next couple of days, you kind of have that, like, dry voice hangover.
Right.
I noticed that whatever happens the day before kind of affects it big time.
Oh, yeah, of course. I mean, the same way that, like, if you blow your voice out the night before, the next day it's bad. It's not bad that day. You know, it completely makes sense that your body is affected that way. So,
And you don't really warm up, though, right? That's what you were saying?
John? No?
No, you.
No, I warm up.
Oh,
no,
I
John
don't,
warms up.
Oh, me? Yeah, no, I don't warm up very, very much, no, to be honest. Like, I usually go in the back lounge and I kind of just, like, try to get my mind right. And warming up to me is more that. It's more just kind of getting my mind right. And then I do a couple scales, and it's more just to test out, like, how high I can sing that day. And my highest note in the set, how much of a struggle that's going to be. And there's days when I can't even get there, you know? Or I'm going to, like, okay, am I going to be able to force this out, or am I going to really struggle today? And that's almost more what warming up is to me, which to a lot of people think that's, like, crazy. But to me, that's fine, because, like, you know, by the time we play at, like, 10 o'clock at night or whatever, I've been up, I've been around, like, I'm fine. Like, I'm warmed up. And I find if I warm up too much, then I'm just, like, I'm going into it, to the show, tired, you know, and I want to have my full stamina for the whole set. You know, I don't want to be, like, running out of gas at the end. So that's my approach with warming up. But I mean, everybody's different. What do you guys do with warming up?
That wouldn't work for me. I sing too high. Like, I'm at the top of my range a lot, just because that's where I get the best resonation, I think.
Sure.
So it's like, I have to warm up. And one thing I noticed too is the seclusion. The preset seclusion is kind of important. Like, it was crazy. On the last solo tour I did, Matt, the drummer, and I were talking about, like, how some of the other guys in the other bands would just, like, they'd be, like, skateboarding, like, 5 minutes before their set, or they'd be, like, FaceTiming with their girlfriend, like, 5 minutes before they go on stage, and then they just walk on stage and play the show. I have to, like, psych myself up, kind of seclude myself and kind of get my mind right.
Sure.
Same with Matt as a drummer. He was saying that.
Right.
Yeah. It's interesting.
I do a similar thing. I found just over the years that I've been doing less and less warm up, and I've been, like, my voice isn't wearing as quickly as it used to. It's actually seems to be getting stronger, I guess, just with technique and whatnot. And especially we've gotten in-ears recently.
Oh, yeah.
So I found that my voice is actually, especially in the beginning of the tour, it's not as, like, worn as I'd like it. So my scream isn't getting as much tone.
Right.
So I've sort of done less preparation, you know, than before.
Dude, when
that's so interesting about screaming, man. That's, like, something people don't realize. It's like, when it's the same with me. Like, the first day of a tour, especially the first day, my scream's, like, way too clean. Like, it doesn't – I don't have the balls. And it takes me usually a couple days to even, like – even a week maybe until I'm like, all right, my scream's, like, where I want it to be now. So that's really interesting that you say that, John. That's, like, really interesting to me.
Yeah.
Same – yeah, and you ran into the same thing in the studio too, like – you kind of just got to mess up your voice for a bit to get it to that point where it sounds really full.
Yeah, it's so wild. Yeah, I started getting these fucking crazy headaches during recording, and it never happened to me, like, during recording screaming, and it never happened to me ever in our career. And then, like, two albums ago, it would just be so bad. I'd get a headache on, like, the second scream, and it would just be like I'd scream, and then while I was screaming, the, like, headache would kind of go away temporarily, and then when I would stop, it would just, like, suck back. It was, like, the worst thing ever. Do you ever get headaches, John?
That sounds terrible.
It's terrible.
Yeah, I've gotten the headaches before. Actually, recording this album, I've been a couple times I was pushing extra hard to just push out more tone, and then the headaches kind of start.
Oh, God,
it's awful. Then, like, sometimes I'm, like, not in the right mindset, and I feel like I get this disconnect between, like, my diaphragm communicating with the rest of my body, and so then I'm, like, tensing up or, like, overexerting or, like, feeling like I need to squeeze, like, tense up other parts of my body, and then that's definitely when headaches kind of start.
Yeah.
I think there's so much mental stuff that plays into, like, your voice that people don't realize, because when people talk about vocals, it just kind of has this, there's, like, a underlying tone of just, like, I don't know what's going on. There's, like, a mysteriousness. Like,
there absolutely is.
I don't know why my voice is like this. I mean, I have all these ideas of why it wasn't like this, but I don't really know for sure.
Yep.
So it's a tricky instrument.
It is tricky because there's nothing visual about it, really. Like, you know, a guitar, you see abstract, a guitar, the string vibrates, there's a fret, you know, there's electronics picking up the sound, it goes into like, everything is physically there, and you can see how it all works.
Yeah, and guitars have factors.
You can't look into your body, you know? And, oh, I know. It's, but I mean, the same thing, like, you could look at the way that you sing and the way, like, everything works, like, okay, I have this physical breath coming in, and then I'm pushing it out, and then my lungs are doing this, and, like, oh, well, maybe I have something on my vocal cord. Like, the same way on a guitar string, you could be like, oh, well, the guitar string is, like, worn out, so I need to change the guitar string, right? There's nothing like that with vocals, so it is mysterious. That's a great word for it. But, I mean, for example, though, there's also the thing where some guys just have it, you know? Like Johnny Craig, he just has it.
Yeah.
He's just a great singer. I never saw him warm up when we toured together.
He warms up throughout the day, he told me. Like, oh, he's singing all day.
Yeah, I mean, he's just like, the guy's lights out. I mean, he's an incredible singer. He's just got this, like, God-given gift, and he's an enigma, yeah. And like, most of us aren't like that. I don't think I've interviewed anybody yet that's really like that. And what was it like being in a band with him, John? I mean, Tillian, too. I mean, you know him really well. Like, what is, like, you said he warmed up, but, like, he's fucked up all the time and everything. And, like, I mean, have you ever seen him really have a terrible, like, sing something bad? Like, it's wild.
He would do things that just didn't, like, I remember when we were doing the first Downtown Bell Mountain, and he busted out the chorus to the Times New Roman, like, without writing it, just, like, kind of off the top of his head, and then in, like, a take, and then it was done, and me and Chris were like, what the fuck? Like, he would do that a lot. Like, he would either like, have nothing, and then be like, yeah, I'm fucked today. And then the next day is, oh, here, I thought of this thing. Here you go. Boom, done. So he definitely had something where you're just like, wow, you're just kind of, I guess, pulling it out of your ass, and it's just, like, amazing.
Yeah, so. It's I know. It's crazy, though. He's one of those people, and I want to tell the story about when he left the band, but I guess I'll do that in a minute, because I was there. I was there for it.
Right.
And I want to know... I want to tell you my perspective. Day. Yeah, it was the last day. I want to tell you my perspective, and I want to get your perspective. Okay, fuck it. I'll just tell it right now. But before I do, we're going to take a quick break to hear from our sponsors, and we'll be right back with Dance Gavin Dance.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Have you ever been frustrated trying to buy tickets online? Most sites make it complicated and then try to sneak in huge fees at checkout. That's why you need to check out SeatGeek. They've made it easier than ever to buy and sell sports and concert tickets. And as all the listeners of this show know, I'm a huge sports fan, especially this time of year with the Blue Jays. You know, the Blue Jays had such a great run last year. And SeatGeek is always the first place I go to look for tickets to a game or a concert. I have the SeatGeek app right on my phone, and just the other day I needed to get some last-minute Blue Jays tickets. And what makes SeatGeek better than all the other websites is it takes all the work and hassle out of shopping for tickets. What it does is it pulls all the tickets available on every other site into one place, so you never miss a deal. Even better, every ticket on SeatGeek is given a grade based on value, so you can immediately find the best deals, the best underpriced seats. And what else I like about it is they have super detailed maps of all the venues, so you can really see the view from your seat, exactly what you're going to see when you get to the concert or you get to the game. But my favorite part is that SeatGeek is always honest and upfront about the price. Like StubHub, you never really know at the end what the full ticket price is going to be, but SeatGeek, they show you the full ticket price right from start to finish, and there's never any surprises or huge fees at checkout. Now, the listeners of my show get a $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase. To get your $20 rebate on tickets, download the free SeatGeek app, go to the settings tab and click add a promo code, and enter the promo code Shane. SeatGeek will send you $20 after you've made the first ticket purchase. Once again, I know you guys are going to concerts, I know you guys are going to games, so please check it out. It's a free $20. Download the free SeatGeek app, settings tab, promo code, Shane, boom, right there. SeatGeek will send you $20 right after you've made your first ticket purchase. Download the free SeatGeek app and enter promo code Shane today. So for the people that don't know, this is 07, and you guys were on tour with us, and...
Strike Anywhere.
You guys were, yeah, Strike Anywhere, From Under to Ashes. We were headlining. It was B Markets. And
yep. We played Maine.
We played Maine. We did play Maine. Portland, Maine. We did a bunch of weird stuff. But the last show was in New Jersey, in Asbury Park, this festival. I think it was called Saints and Sinners Festival. So I didn't know anything about Johnny and like his drug use or anything really about that at this point. I knew he was a bit of a crazy guy at times, and I knew that you guys were a little bummed out at him in some ways. So the place we played is this kind of big, like almost like an arena, and so it has like a concourse area, you know, like where they would sell like concessions at an arena or a ballpark. So that's where they have all the merch. So I'm standing at our merch table. It's me, Josh, guitar player for my band, and Johnny. And we're just talking, we're hanging out, I don't know, having a good time. And all of a sudden, I hear this music, and I'm like, Johnny, is that your intro? And I'll never forget the look on his face. His face just fell, like, what? And he just bolted, and he ran. And like it's an arena, basically, so it takes a while to get down to the stage and figure it out and everything. So you guys started playing without him. And right. I think he got there like for the end of the first song. And yeah. And you guys had enough of him and basically had a huge blow up. And you, as from what I remember, you guys fucking left him in New Jersey and that was it. Is that how you recount it, John?
Yeah. So we got up there and then Times New Roman started. He wasn't there. And then, so I just started screaming and now you know, and
like, yeah, yeah,
but it sounded terrible. And I think at that point that might have been the largest show we had ever played, so
yeah. And I'm sure it was, yeah. So it was a big deal to you guys.
Yeah, exactly. I think we had gotten through maybe at least half of the song and then he showed up, and we were pretty pissed or whatever. And things at that point were, you know, more like a big deal, like, to us. Just, this needs to work. We need to get this going. Like, no fuck ups and whatnot.
Right.
Obviously still important or whatever, but, you know, we weren't veterans of, well, I don't know if I want to call us veterans, but we weren't as seasoned, as we are. Now, so yeah, we were pretty pissed, and then then he kind of, you know, knew that he had fucked up, and then disappeared, and we pretty much just we were supposed to start this other tour with Heavy Lolo.
Okay, yeah, I remember that band.
And then I think Terramellos, and then Arsonist Gale, the girls replaced us because we kicked them out, and then drove from Asbury Park, New Jersey, to Sacramento.
Yikes.
Straight.
Yeah, it's brutal.
So, and then he went on to play some shows with Skylet Drive, I think. Then they ended up taking him back home. So yeah, that was. And then the whole kicking out was in front of like all of the bands on the tour, on the whole row of buses. So there's many witnesses to the whole.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Blow up. So.
It was. It got intense, to say the least.
Yeah, absolutely.
I remember it well.
It had been a lot of tension building up to that point, so yeah.
I mean, the thing is like, obviously we've talked about Johnny a lot. I haven't had him on the show yet. Maybe I will get his perspective on some things. I'll maybe give him a call. But you know, obviously, like, he's an important part of what Dance Gavin Dance was, and in some ways still is, and his voice and his legacy is important, and it would be ridiculous not to talk about him and not to bring up his role. Now, sure. Utillion, like, you're a very accomplished singer, a great singer in your own right, and now you've basically been in the band as the lead singer longer than... Is someone taking a piss? What is that?
No, I was pouring some Diet 7
dude,
up into a glass.
When you gotta go, you gotta go, man. Diet 7 up, that's a random drink.
Oh yeah.
Who are you, my mom? That's literally all my mom drinks.
Settles the stomach, and it's low on sugar.
It's, I think it's no sugar actually, but hey.
Yeah, no sugar.
Anyways, dude.
Music.
Let's get back to that. No, but Tillian, like, basically what I'm saying is, like, you've been in the band now longer than any other singer. Like, this is going to be your third album. I don't think Johnny did three albums. Maybe he did three.
Yeah.
Two. I don't know how many. Two. Well, two and an EP.
Two and
right?
a half. Yeah.
Yeah. So
two and an EP.
So you are like the guy, but I mean, you must kind of feel like you're forever going to live in Johnny Craig's shadow.
Yeah, I mean, to some degree, for sure, but...
Awesome question.
Well, it's a real question. I mean, like, I'm not...
I know, I
you know.
Know
me. I'm not going to fuck around with, like, bullshit.
It's true. It's just straightforward.
Yeah.
I think
it would definitely be that way more so if I had joined the band. Because when I first joined, there was definitely a drop-off in draw. You know what I mean? Like, the first tour that I did.
Sure.
It was, I mean, I don't know when, I don't want to say it was a flop, but it was, I mean, and from my eyes, it seemed like a flop. And then something happened when we did Instant Gratification, where we kind of just had a resurgence.
Yeah, absolutely. This is on my list of questions. I want to continue. Yeah.
So success kind of quells that, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Also, there's a new generation of younger fans who literally tell me, they're like, yeah, the first song I heard was We Own the Night, which is like the single off of the newest album. Or like, I got into you guys from Acceptance Speech, blah, blah, blah. So there's,
interesting, yeah.
There's another younger generation. What I noticed also is, like, when we did the 10-year tour, the fans that came out were there was a lot more of an older crowd.
Oh, you did notice that, yeah.
Definitely. And when we do, you know, tours without Johnny and Kurt, the crowd seems a little bit younger.
Right.
So I think there are, just because the band's been around for so long and because, you know, it's managed to stay relevant, there's a lot of new fans that, like, that's kind of partially why we did the live album that we just did.
Yeah, yeah, because you sang all the songs on it, right? You didn't have
right
the other members, yeah.
And I think, like, certain people might even be introduced to those songs for the first time, kind of.
Yeah.
I mean, people, I don't know. Like, when I listen to a band, I don't necessarily dive into their back catalog right away if they've been around for 10 years.
Well, with you guys, I mean, you guys have, it's going to be your seventh album. I mean, that's right. A daunting task.
Right.
You know, for someone to do that. And often when you do that, like, some people want to start at the beginning. I think it's better to work your way backwards.
Agreed, yeah.
Yeah, partially because, you know, I don't know, the music tends to be more relevant. And also sometimes, like, the early stuff for bands can be so horribly recorded, you know,
right.
and like, yeah, that I think starting at the back is not the best answer. But anyways, yeah, go on.
I mean, that's pretty much it. That kind of quells that. But there's obviously and it's not just Johnny too. Like, there's a lot of Kurt fans out there too.
Right.
Who are like just diehard Kurt and just love anything that he does too. So it's there's kind of both shadows there.
Is it hard to separate like that stuff from, like, sometimes, like, you're always going to have people that are going to say, oh, Johnny was the best singer of Dance Gavin Dance, or Kurt was, and like people will say, oh, Tillian's a distant third, you know, whatever. Like, is that shit hard to swallow? Or,
well,
and at the beginning, it probably was even more hard to swallow.
I think at the beginning it was kind of less, because I don't know if it was because now it's more relevant again.
Right.
The band is more relevant again, but I didn't really notice as much negative stuff at the beginning as I'm doing now, as I've kind of had chance to settle in. But yeah,
absolutely.
there's also those, I don't know how to like calculate the percentages, but there's definitely people who give me support too. And, you know, I'm their favorite singer in the band, whatever. But it's hard to say that, like, yeah, whatever, I don't care. It's kind of like, you know, if you see something that's super negative, like online or you hear it in person, like, despite how hard you try to convince yourself, like, oh, it doesn't matter, like, I don't care, I'm just here doing my thing.
You're still a person.
Yeah, exactly. There's still a part of you that's like, ugh. Well, that sucks, but whatever.
Yeah, I hear the like in person, the sort of rundown of who's the best singer from fans all the time. I don't know if that is because like they just look at me as the guy who's known them all, so then they feel like, oh, I'll tell him, you know. So
yeah,
like,
of course.
He won't, you know, he's not one of them. So like, I'll just tell him my candid opinion. So I get a lot of like, John, just so you know, Kurt's the best. I think that song is the best, or just, you know, Tillian's definitely the greatest, or, hey man, I really like when you were back with Johnny, why don't you get back with him? So I hear that all the time. We call them complicits, because they usually start with a compliment.
Yeah.
Of, you know, this part's really good. And then it followed up with, but I think it would have been better if you did that.
That's right. That's right. Well, we call it, it's, I mean, you guys are going back to Europe. In Germany, we have what we call the review, because in Germany, they'll always say stuff like, you know, very good show, last time, much better, you know, and you're
yeah,
like,
right.
Thanks, or my favorite
right.
is they'll say, last time you play 16 songs, this time only 15, why is this? Like,
right. Yeah.
I'm like, didn't recall exactly how many we played last time, but you did, so I'm glad to see you're paying attention.
Right, exactly.
But it is, yeah, it is interesting, and you know, you kind of have to just take it and smile, and that's a big part of what we do, is having to, you know, deal with some of the fans that kind of don't completely understand the dynamic, you know. So
yeah, they like the band. Best. They're excited about it. They're just giving a critique that seems kind of, it just has a, I don't know, maybe they don't understand the context in which they're presenting it. But
right.
Yeah, it's funny to get that one.
Sorry. The best one
Go
I
ahead.
Got was in Omaha when I was there with Dance Gavin Dance, and I had someone come up to me and tell me, yeah, last time you came here with your old band, Tides of Man, you guys were terrible. I hope you do better this time. And it's like, what the hell?
Right. Yeah, man. Like,
I don't
understand
how you could tell that to somebody. Yeah, and then there's always those little. I guess I'll kind of call back on the interview you did with the singer of Bayside.
Just a few weeks ago, Anthony.
You have to ooze confidence on stage.
Yeah, we've been talking about that a lot on this podcast. That for some reason when he said that, that's really resonated with me.
Yeah.
You too, yeah, definitely.
But yeah, it's interesting because at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter if there's one kid in whatever city that thinks you were a dick because you didn't go smoke weed in the back lounge with the rest of the band. That's a real example. Like, yeah, because I don't smoke and you know, I didn't go to the back lounge to smoke weed and hang out. So they're like, yeah, Tillian was a dick. Everybody else was hanging out and smoking and he didn't really come back there. Like, just stuff like that. It's kind of interesting.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I think you have to have a certain amount of boundaries, right, with your fans, and I think most fans understand that, you know, and they're occasionally you'll run into ones that don't, and you know, and that's fine because ultimately you have a job that's important, and you have the next day on tour and the next day on tour, and you have a record you're gonna write, and you know, so you have to have those boundaries. I totally get it. One last thing I wanted to say, though, when you were talking about Times New Roman, like that song being kind of the first track on your, you know, debut album, kind of the song that started it all in a way. Tillian, like when you sing that song, are you trying to channel Johnny's performance? Like this, you know, that John talked about, like this kind of amazing pull it out of your ass, like lightning in a bottle. Are you trying to channel that? Or do you find now, like, you have found your own voice in the band to where your performance of that song, or any of those songs for that matter, is almost like, is your interpretation of it? How much of that is you, or is it you emulating, like, the old singer? I've never asked anybody that before. I've never asked anybody that before, you know, in that role, and I'm just very curious as to how you approach it.
Well, I think it's almost more technical. Like it's a lot easier for me to sing Kurt songs because our style's more similar.
Oh, okay.
And he's just a little bit lower. And Johnny, on a lot of his stuff, like he has a lot of power in his low range that I just don't have. So it's like sometimes I even have to change it, like change the melody a little bit to just be a little bit higher so that I can get that push. But I would say, yeah, I mean, to answer your question, there's definitely like a little more. It's like it's in between. Like I definitely open my mouth maybe a little wider and get a little more grit when I'm doing some of the Johnny songs.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it makes sense. You've heard the songs before. I mean, were you a fan of the band? Were you a fan of Dance Gavin Dance before you joined?
You know, I actually got into them because my old band played a show with them. I think it was in 2010 when they had the Happiness CD. They were touring Happiness.
Yep.
So I had heard of Dance Gavin Dance, but I didn't go back to listening to any of the Johnny era stuff until 2010. So.
Oh, wow. Yep.
But yeah, I was definitely a fan of what they were doing, like on the Happiness tour, and that's what made me go back and listen and become a fan.
Hey, John, are you jealous that Tillian gets to take a break on these anniversary shows and gets to, what do? You walk off stage and just like take a breather?
Yeah, so we have the Happiness songs where Will streams. So yep. Then I have like a
breather. You don't scream those? Will does it?
Yeah, Will does it on that record.
Sick, man. That's a nice breather for you. Yeah, no, I know. I know Will did the screaming for a while.
Yeah, for sure. It's on the anniversary tour, yeah, I'm pretty much there the whole time except for the one song. But stamina's kind of been an issue with me. I feel like I get to around the hour mark and then it's not that my voice goes out, it just gets so fatigued that I lose a lot of grit. So I like turn from a scream to kind of a yell.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to kind of figure out, like, I don't really know if I can get to like play an hour and a half set just because my scream is like a lot of push and a lot like I don't necessarily find ways or
you don't fake it.
I don't fake it. I don't try to quiet it down or anything, because I don't really do anything singing, so just kind of go full force. But yeah, around, it's a I'm not really sure if in the future would be cool if we could play a little longer sets. But yeah, I kind of tap out, especially with our music being technical and whatnot.
Of course,
our sets tend to only be around an hour max.
Yeah.
But how long are your guys' sets? Don't you guys do like a 18 something songs, right? You guys
we do. Yeah, it depends on the songs. We generally play when we're headlining, we play at least an hour. When we were doing the 10-year anniversary, we were doing an entire record of 11 songs, and I think we were doing 8 or 9 more, so 20 songs, and that clocked out about an hour and 15, I'd say. So yeah, we're comfortable at that range, and I find once I'm going, I'm okay. I think once I get past the 45 to 50 minute mark, I can probably go pretty long. I don't know what it is. It's like you get your second wind or something.
Right.
You know,
right.
But is it weird for you, Tillian, like when you sing these songs on a normal tour every night, and then all of a sudden these anniversary shows and you're going to do more of them in Europe, hearing other people sing the songs, is that kind of cool for you, or is it weird?
No, I like the break.
Yeah. Do you listen to the other guys sing? Do you have them in your in-ears?
They are in my ears. Well, actually, no, but my mic is still up there.
Oh, yeah.
And so my mic is still picking everything up.
Yeah.
We don't have enough channels to put them in the ears too. But one thing about the ears that I kind of want to bring up is when we first got them, I felt like I was cheating. It was like a cheat code. It's like putting a Game Shark in the 64. I was like, what the hell? How did we not do this all along? How was I not always on this? It seemed because there's always so many monitor issues and
oh yeah,
I don't know, it just seemed crazy. But yeah, I would listen to them on some nights, and other nights I would just kind of, sometimes I'd call my girlfriend, just be like, yeah, I'm on my break.
I totally would do that too. I totally get that, man. I totally get that. And I don't know, I still I think it's really cool that you are open to that, you know, having other people come in, previous members, and sing. Cause to liken it to a relationship, it's a little bit I don't know. It's a little bit like your boyfriend, like your girlfriend's ex-boyfriend kind of coming around and hanging out with her. You know what I mean? And I'm pretty impressed that you guys not only, that you guys actually went through with that and did it, and now you're doing it again. I think that's really cool. It's really, really cool for the fans and for you, Tillian, to not have an ego. You know, this is the Lead Singer Syndrome podcast, so for you to not be pulling the lead singer, well, I'm the fucking lead singer of this band now, those guys fucking quit, or those guys got kicked out, for you to do that is pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, there's...
I think we view the band kind of as a collective. So with all the feature, we have different guest features on this record in the past ones with guitar players from before and then other bands kind of related to the band. So it's doesn't necessarily feel like it's just this lineup. It's just, it's a group of people rather than a specific lineup, you know?
Right. Are you guys worried? So when you guys go to Europe, is Johnny and Kurt, they're riding with you guys on the bus?
They are.
Yeah.
And that's all they're doing? They're not performing in their own bands at all?
I think Kurt is going to play a kind of acoustic set.
Okay.
And I actually don't know about Johnny. It's still kind of in talks.
Are you guys a bit worried? I don't know. I guess I can speak candidly about Johnny because it's been put on blast so much about, the things that have gone on with him. I know Johnny a long time, but are you guys ever concerned that either he's going to get out of control, he's going to do something where you guys have to either apologize for him, or he's going to make you guys, kind of ruin you guys in a way, ruin your reputation. I mean, or are you worried that he's just going to bail? Are these actual genuine concerns, or do you think this is a little overblown?
He's not going to bail. I doubt that. It's come up. We've thought about it. John has laid out some scenarios. where we could get possibly get in trouble in a foreign country where people, you know, might want to fight or that kind of situation, because he's definitely fight bait. Like I've toured with him enough to know that I think he gets in more fights with random people than anybody I've ever met. But yeah, so there's always that.
Yeah, there's a couple, I guess, factors. The Europe tour is going to be shorter. Typically, we've had a not the same
genre. Yeah, well, I mean, I know he's been working on himself in some ways, and I know he's had, you know, things have gone back and forth, and I wish him the best, and I, you know, obviously wish you guys the best too on all the stuff you got coming up. So new record, you're thinking September? Can you tell us what the two album titles you're flirting with are?
I don't know.
I don't know if we can.
Yeah, probably not. Do,
but probably not a good idea.
Yeah, probably.
Because they could not end up being the title. But there's, I guess I could say there's 13 songs that we've recorded. So whether or not all those make the record is one thing. But so far, it seems like they will all make the record.
Yeah, I think so.
And musically, is the record something we would expect kind of for the next in line with Dance Gavin Dance, or is there some stuff like out of left field?
A little bit of that.
Yeah.
I don't know. We were talking about it the other night. It kind of feels like it kind of compromises or includes a lot of the different sounds of the band. There's one thing that's different, I guess, than the last record is we don't have like, there's a lot of three choruses on the last record. There aren't any on this record. It's a, there's more parts, more riff, I guess, more stuff. It's not as I guess some of the songs are got some pretty weird structure,
like
maybe akin to some Death Star DBM2 style stuff. So
okay, well, that's cool, man. Well, I mean, you guys have really had a great resurgence with the last record. I mean, we had a very big first week. Congratulations on that. And it really seems like you guys have kind of finally solidified the lineup with Utillion. John, you know, I know you've been back in the band for like a long time now, but, you know, figuring out the lineup and everything going back together. And it's really, really great to talk to you guys. I wish you guys the best with this record and moving forward. I'd love to tour with you guys sometimes. We tried before, but you wanted too much money.
I know, we did. Well, then we took the 10-year instead.
Yeah.
We were like, we should do this. Then we got the 10-year idea.
Yeah, well, hey, so we tried. Yeah, to the people listening, yeah. That happens, man. You know, Dance Gavin Dance, they're ballers. They need their cash.
we were that director, the co. You were, what were you, it was you and Census Fail,
yeah,
and you were giving us the main support.
Yeah, we were trying to get you on the undercard. I think it would have been... it would have been massive, and it would have been a lot of fun. But you know what? We'll make it happen. We'll make it work.
Yeah.
You should have switched this out with Senses. That would have been the. That would have worked.
Well, I mean, you never know.
No shit on them. But that's a phrase.
I'm sorry. If phone broke up. What did you say?
Said no shit on them.
I mean, I wasn't trying to throw shade at it. No, I was just saying we. I don't know what I was trying to say.
Wow, John, anyway. Dude, you're going to have to take it up with Buddy on Twitter, John. I think there could be some beef now.
He said no shits.
You just called Census Fail shit, John? All right, hey, man. Thank you guys so much for taking the time, especially when you're in the middle of recording vocals. That's really cool. I love you both, and good luck with the record.
Hell yeah, dude. Thanks so much.
Hey, yeah, thank you guys. Have a great day.
You too, man.
So there we go. My first three-way with John Mess and Tillian Pearson of Dance Gavin Dance. Great talk, great people. They got a new record. They said September. They wouldn't give me the title. That's cool. I'm sure you'll find out about it very soon. I'm going to leave you with a tune, as always. Here's the song we talked about a little bit. One of the newer songs from their last record, Instant Gratification. Here's We Own the Night on Lead Singer Syndrome, and we'll see you next Monday. Peace and love.
Forget my jealousy. You swallowed the demons on your own. There's nothing.